fellow nerds and ne'er-do-wells, it's AJ here, and welcome back to another episode of the Adventurers Anonymous podcast, the home of improvised fantasy fucknuggetry. Now, usually, you'd join us week by week as a rotating cast of geeks sip cocktails and play Dungeons & Dragons. However, after the roaring success of the last interview we did, we decided to grease up a few palms and find another guest. That's right, Matt Durant, the voice of Belcia, and myself sat down with the godfather of homebrew TTRPG content himself, Paul, aka Ampersand, a man whose surname is a mystery more closely shrouded than the whereabouts of Lord Lucan's lunchbox. You may know him for being the pioneer of the homebrew Havoc movement that is currently going from strength to strength out there on the internet. Along the way, we chatted about a wide range of topics, spanning everything from what inspired him to call this community of content creators together, how he navigates being a DM whilst juggling all the plates, and we even took some time to dig out some of his favourite bits from the arse end of Norse mythology. All whilst name-checking a pantheon of fellow content creators whom he loves and respects. Of course, we will try to link to all of those accounts in the show notes where possible, so that you can check them out for yourselves. But hell, you didn't come here to listen to me gabble on now, did you? So without further ado, go grab yourself a drink, pull your chair closer to the fire, and come join us for a very special Adventurers Anonymous interview. Please enjoy. There you go, we're recording. And that means it's just time to give a massive Adventurers Anonymous welcome to, I'll get it right, Paul, a.k.a. Ampersand.
Hello, woo, I'm here. Howdy.
I'm liking the fact that we're leaving your surname as a closely shrouded mystery.
Yeah. I might not even have one. I, like you said, I might be like Prince and like Madonna. And I just not have a second name.
Yeah. I mean, who needs one? Who needs one?
That would save time for that form, wouldn't it? Just don't have a second name.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been looking forward to having you on the podcast for a bit. This is only the second interview we've ever done. We did one with your colleague and partner in crime, Callum Lee, Clee D&D. It's C Lee D&D, isn't it?
Yes, on Twitter it's at C Lee D&D, not Clee D&D, which it looks like, and how I pronounced it for a very, very long time.
Ah, so if he's going to set up like a Cleethorpes-based Dungeons & Dragons society.
Yeah.
Clee D&D would definitely be the way forward. All right, so for the sake of our listeners, do you want to give yourself a bit of an intro and tell people where you're at and what you're doing?
So my name is Paul, a.k.a. Ampersand, AmpersandD20 on Twitter. I started making videos and opening intros for people's TTRPGs and Kickstarters. I'm currently DMing Homebrew Havoc, which is, I presume, what these guys have brought me on to talk about, which is a collaborative effort of about six or seven different creators all across TTRPG Twitter, bringing their content together, homebrew content together, and throwing it into a D&D campaign that I have to do my best to focus on and make into a story.
That's kind of brilliant. I really like the whole concept of homebrew content and just kind of cobbling together people's great ideas and stuff like that. So I know Callum spoke at some length in the last interview we did about the concept of Homebrew Havoc, what it is. And I know a lot of our listeners are probably already on there. And if they're not, they probably should be. So
yes,
we'll leave a link somewhere in the outro. But what inspired you in the first place to make Homebrew Havoc?
So, a very long time ago, I would talk like November, early November, Callum, Silly D&D, contacted me and said, we should do a D&D stream together. I was like, okay, that was quite a nice moment for me because I felt that at that point I'd initiated myself into the community because someone approached me and asked me to DM. So I was like, yeah, okay, give me a week or so and I'll think about an idea to do. I was like, how can I make it unique? How can I not be the same as every other five friends on Twitch streaming? I was like, well, what if we did homebrew stuff? Like, what if I made it all? What if I did everything myself? And so I suggested that to Callum. I went, yeah, all right, can you do that? Can you homebrew the entire campaign? I was like, no, what if we got a bunch of other people to do that instead? I said, look, I'll reach out. I know some people. I've talked to a fair few of them now. And I know it exists So why don't we just get a bunch of people together and see if they want to give us or let us buy, purchase their content, and we'll throw it into a campaign together and we'll credit them, obviously, and we'll invite them to a Discord. We'll get some big names in on it so that, you know, build up some hype. And yeah, we'll find three other players and see if they're interested and see what they can do.
That's kind of really exciting. Like, I think the world is a better place when we share our ideas.
Definitely.
I say that with no sense of irony as I work for the patent office. And my full-time job is protecting people's ideas. But don't tell anyone. I think the world is better when we share our ideas. Probably how I get fired. This will probably be the last podcast I can afford to do. Sorry to my boss. But yeah, no, I think the world is genuinely a better idea when we pull our ideas. And being that D&D is completely built off one's imagination.
Precisely. Yeah, absolutely. And I really wanted people who were from Britain, like UK, because I'd seen like 1,000 American streams and whatnot, and they were not in my time zone. And I got a bit sick at this point of dealing with time zones. So first thing I wanted was British creators, or British players, I should say. And then I wanted people who had already created something to be my player. So Shiv, one of my players, he's a writer, and he does that. Ailey is an artist, so she was happy to not only play, but she did all the character art for us. I thought, that's brilliant. Amazing. Yeah, absolutely. Tony, I saw through her guest spot on Roll the Damn Dice, and she was just a fantastic role player. So I was like, yep, gotta have you, come over. And she also makes, like, D&D stickers and memorabilia and stuff like that. So I was really excited to have such a creative group all pushing into the same direction, all sharing that shared vision of this is what it could be and how good it could be if we do it right. Could you help me do it right? Because I can't do this on my own. So yeah, after that, I reached out to some creators and decided to do everything homebrew.
That's brilliant. I mean, it very much sounds like you're the A-team cherry-picking the best special forces of D&D. Whereas you've literally just made our little group sound like the Chuckle Brothers. No offense, Matt.
No, I think we all bring... It's interesting you say that. I think there's certain... I think you have to have a certain creative personality type to even begin thinking about D&D, and that naturally, I think, just attracts artists and writers and... people who work with video and all kinds of things, and it's
there's that mindset of you look at something and see what it could be or how much better it could be, rather than just what it is. So like all the players look at something, whether it's like a piece of writing, a picture, a video, and we'll go, that's good, I could do that better, or that could be better. And that's what we want things to be the best they possibly can, and everyone we've brought on so far shares that idea, so I'm really excited for that.
That's really good. And I think D&D in itself, and possibly tabletop role-playing in itself, is quite a broad church. And there is a space in there for just about everybody.
Yeah.
I think we may have touched on this a little bit in the last interview we did, but we'll go over it again because it's kind of cool. There are people who are attracted to it just for the lore. There are people who are, and I mean that both ways, like the rules in terms of, I am the lore. And also first crap impression out of the and also the lore is in the history and the canon and that stuff. But then there's people who are drawn to it for the rules, for the statistics, for the rigid structure. And then there's people like me who are just drawn to like pissing about, having a good time and spinning out a yarn.
Yeah.
And you can hide in any one of those or all of those, or like, and I love seeing different groups made up of people who are from those different camps.
And now I know Callum did say it, but we'll have to say it every time, with the internet being the way that it is and the TTRPG Twitterverse being the way that it is, it is so easy to find a bunch of people who are drawn to D&D for any of those reasons. I know if I want to, my standard game is rules light fantasy, but if I wanted to do, you know, a rules as written futuristic sci-fi D&D game, I could probably find players within a day who are interested in that and want to play that. Like, there's such variety of people out there now, all with this shared idea and shared interest. It's so easy to find people who are like-minded, like you say.
Okay. That leads us very nicely into our next question, almost like we intended this, but we didn't, because we're leaping around all over the place. How do you balance homebrew content, as in finding the balance between the rule of cool and like fair play, I suppose you'd call it, you know, like sensible rules?
So I come, before I dived headfirst in the pool of D&D, I come from a MOBA background. I was obsessed with League of Legends.
Right. You're gonna have to unpack that one. What was that mean?
So League of Legends is a MOBA. It's a massive online battle arena game. Ah. It's the biggest esports game in the world. The last team that won it at Worlds got several millions worth of pounds just for playing this game, and it's got a bunch of lore and history. And I've designed a D&D game just around its lore. But one of the main features that it tries to portray, doesn't always succeed, but tries to portray, is fair play and counterplay. So like, yes, this person might be good at this, but is really bad at that. So that's how you counter it. So like, they might have a lot of damage, but they don't have a lot of health. So if you can survive the attack and hit it back, they will die and you win. And that's how I like to look at when I'm homebrewing monsters especially, is there any counterplay to it? Is it just an invincible monster with no chance of defeating it? If so, no, you shouldn't have that in your game. The players won't find it fun, and neither will you, I hope. So I like to have monsters that, if they have multi-attack, for example, I want the players to be able to attack it from multiple sides and, you know, whittle its health down. I've created a monster, I've not ever released it, it was for a home game, where it had different health points depending on which part that you attacked it. So its hands, its mouth, and its feet. And if you say attacked its hands, its smash attack or a punch attack no longer worked. If you attacked its mouth, its breath attack no longer worked. So depending on which one you were most afraid of, you would attack that. And then that's the counterplay. So eventually the monster gets less and less multi-attacks, as it can't attack you with its punch, as it can't attack you with its breath.
That's kind of clever.
Yeah, I think it even had, its tail even had a health point, and it had like a tail, let's call it a tail whip attack. And once you chopped off its tail, it could no longer do that. And eventually the players whittled it down and killed it, and they thought it was really cool how I described the injuries that it had sustained in each of its different hit point areas.
See, that's a lot of foreplay. That's very clever. Yeah. But I also like that theory. Every Death Star needs an exhaust port.
Yeah, exactly that.
Which, I mean, an exhaust port on a multi-headed beast, clearly, like, two digits in the arse will take down anything. Like, take down a velociraptor with that. But that's a really nice way of looking at it, actually. And, yeah, I often, and Matt probably tell me, like, I often get bogged down in the narrative, and then I'm like, oh, the thing I created dead. But we had a lot of fun. Yeah. But in reality, it was far too easy to kill.
We are very good at our adventuring. We are very efficient.
Highly skilled. Highly skilled. Or I'll just drink too many cocktails. Just be like, ah, fuck it. Like, the creature has a heart attack or something.
Just spontaneously falls over for no reason whatsoever. Well done, you defeated it.
Yeah. Yay! Yeah, no, that's really interesting in itself. And I think we've only dabbled in homebrew content. I mean, if you go back long enough, when Maud of Nightmares was introduced a bit afterwards in our campaign, played by Chanel, she stumbled across, they stumbled across a goblin priestess called Mellifluent Beltcrack, because all NPCs I create have ridiculous
names.
That's
an amazing name. That's so much more creative than any name I've ever came up with. That's
insane. I live to make ridiculous names, as Matt will probably
know. Oh, yeah.
And then obviously with a name like Mellifluence, it's all about honey. So she had a beehive on her back.
Of course.
And the players killed... They kind of killed her, or she sort of died peacefully in her bed, sort of. You'll have to listen to the podcast, isn't it? And Maud was like, I'm taking the beehive off her back. And I was like, oh, fuck off. But you're well within your rights. So I had to homebrew a load of content about this beehive that suddenly became like a weaponized item, and you attune to the beehive and you wear it like a fucking back hat, and you can deploy bees, and occasionally it shats out some honey for sustenance. And I was like, this is not a balanced piece of equipment.
I always feel bad in those moments when a player says, can I do this? And you're like, well, there's no reason you can't that I can think of right now, but I really wish you wouldn't because it's going to give me a headache. But yeah, you can, I suppose.
I have this pain every week. I mean, Matt takes the piss out of me. they love getting into the long grass of characters and NPCs. Mm. And then I'm like, oh, bollocks, accents. And then depending on what region they're in, and I always just panic and do a West Country accent. And so Matt made this kind of like spin the wheel of AJ accents, and it was literally like West Country, West Country, West Country.
Scottish.
Yeah, all the dwarves are Scottish, and everyone from the southern coast is like, sounds like they ride around on a combine harvester.
You see, that's really interesting. Because, like, everyone does that with their accents. Like, oh, you know, dwarves are Scottish, this person's this, and like you've just said. But when I do accents, or I try and avoid accents because I can never keep them up for very long anyway. But when I do an NPC speaking, it depends on their position that of what they sound like, that all my mayors have the exact same voice. Like, it doesn't matter. All across my games, all the mayors have the exact same voice. All evil witches, fair enough, they will all have the same voice in most people's campaigns, but yeah, they always have a higher pitched, squeaky voice.
Yeah.
My mayors always have a large mustache and go, oh, yes. I think we should definitely invade that kingdom. They all try and sound like Winston Churchill.
See, I like trying to delight the players when I'm remember to, like, we had a wolf in the campaign. We still technically sort of, if you follow along the campaign, have a wolf somewhere. It's currently embargoed in a it's currently in a pound in Port Zoo.
Because
the players got arrested and got sent to jail, and we had to put a wolf somewhere, so we put him in the pound. But about halfway through the playing the campaign for a year, they learned how to speak with animals, and they'd never heard the wolf talk before. And the wolf was called Lady.
Yes.
And I was like, well, fuck it. That's a human construct. What if the wolf isn't called Lady? So the first thing the wolf was like, my name's Barbara. And just sort of like sounded like Ray Winston or something like that. And I was like, what a delightful idea that this beautiful looking wolf is actually like smokes 40 a day and comes from Ireland or something like that. But
I also like that, like, you corrected the name as well. Like, right, I've been wanting to say this for ages. My name's not Lady, okay? I don't remember that. I didn't choose that, okay? My name is Barbara. Yeah. Let's start calling me that from now on.
And it just became a song going joke, and Barbara's like, I accepted Lady because you fed me, but now you can piss off. But yeah, no, then I forget, and I always reference her as Lady.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, shit, her name's Barbara. So we ended up in this big sort of ongoing joke, and we were like, stop dead naming Barbara. And it just became this ongoing joke. But yeah, no, we sort of talked about this with Callum. I think part of the delight of D&D is fucking about with accents.
Yeah.
And when they go wrong, they go wrong, but there's a vulnerability. And when you find players that you enjoy playing with and you trust, who cares when stuff goes off the rail?
Absolutely.
And I'm of a mind to be stupid enough to put this crap on the internet, and I don't really mind who laughs with me or at me or whatever. Like, at some point, the Philippines are going to come after us as a nation because we've insulted them accidentally more times than I care to remember.
I always say, like, when I'm prepping for a session, I ask my wife's advice a lot. She plays a little bit of D&D, but she knows a lot of real-world stuff. And I reference an NPC in my prep, and she goes, oh, what does that NPC sound like? I'm like, I have no idea. Mm. No idea. Until the second they speak, I have no idea what that NPC is going to sound like. And it will sometimes be a surprise to me. And I'll have to, like, if I do it one where I know I'm not going to be able to keep this up because it physically hurts to do it, I have to say, no, that's not their voice. That's not their voice. I'm changing it now. We're doing a different voice because they're quite an important NPC and they're going to be speaking a lot and they're not doing that voice because it hurts.
What kind of accents are you doing there, Hertz? Are they like a thrash metal singer?
Hello, my name is Knock Levy.
That one hurts.
See, I always do like, yeah, no, that's a really good point. I don't know if I've ever gone growly. Like, I do a lot of like rock trolls. Yeah. They kind of sound a little bit dumb. But like, I don't know if I've ever gone
growly.
That's
very similar to the voice I give my dog. But it's very similar to how my dog speaks in like in the real world.
But then, we went over this like in the other podcast, right? But I need, there's certain accents that I need to, I keep trying Scouse. And
yeah.
I'll start in Scouse and then it will just sort of move across the country somewhere up north and I'll be like,
okay. I am impressed how, like, what you can pick up a character that we saw 2 years ago and, well, I assume you remember the accent, but you do a good job of, like, you must have notes somewhere, but I'm like,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
No. I mean, my Miro board for our campaign looks like the serial killer's lair in Seven. There's just shit just everywhere and like threads between them. And then I have to put a little note on, I've got a little sticky note for every character with a little kind of like him and her connected to them. And then they've incidentally or accidentally killed so many characters. I have to have a little icon for like, this guy's dead or this guy's presumed dead, might bring him back.
Killed, yeah, it does. Insulted, had sexual relations with.
yeah, there was a point early on where we realised Hanash had slept with 1/10 of the cast.
Oh.
We're either going to have to get this guy to some sort of fantasy clinic. Or...
See, that is definitely a skill I don't have. My accents have zero consistency, and I'm not just talking about session to session. In the same conversation, my NPCs can just straight up change accents. And after a while, I'm like, yeah, he's travelled a lot. He doesn't know where he's from. Nobody does.
Yeah, see, I think I got the bug originally, long before I played D&D. I sort of had a bit of time off. I played some D&D when I was younger, or TTRPG. It was like a Star Wars thing. And then I didn't really play for about 20-odd years. But there was definitely a time in the middle. I was a developer. Mm. I was working at a design agency in Bakewell in Derbyshire. And my chair happened to be nearest the front door of the office. So every time the fucking doorbell rang with the postman, I had to go and collect the post. And after a while, I was like, I'm going to make a game of this. I'm just going to just every day, I'm going to answer the door in a different accent and just be like, hooray, my lover.
That's amazing.
Well, like, the next day, I'd be like, all right, how's it going? You're right. How's it been? And I was like thinking, this guy's either going to be like, he's either going to think I'm nuts or he's losing his mind. But yeah, I've always enjoyed pissing about and role playing. So D&D is no great reach there. But for the consistency's sake, Christ, this isn't like the Royal Shakespeare Society.
Yeah.
Like, I've no illusions that we're producing Hamlet or anything like that. And I think the main aim is to have fun. See, we're already going off track. We're literally like
a little bit
part way through this. Let's bring it back with a question. Who is your fantasy hero? I know that's a little bit off target, but and feel free for it to be a content creator or a character. There's no limitations.
Excellent question, then. I hadn't thought of characters.
And also by fantasy, I mean like adult literature as well. You know, like you can go Mills and Boone if you want.
I think in terms of... I'll do one of each then. So I think TTRPG creators, I have to reference Dungeon Dudes. They were the first channel I found on YouTube with regard to TTRPG. I spammed every single one of their videos. I learned so much from them. And their campaign, Dungeons of Drakenheim, which they released on Kickstarter probably about a year ago now, because I was very late to them, was fantastic. They did all the voices. It was wonderful. And every hint and tip that they gave in terms of how to be a better player, how to be a better DM, I absorbed that knowledge, and they were so influential in how I am now at the table. Other people on Twitterverse I will reference are Abyssal Brews, who create fantastic items, I think, weekly now.
I've actually asked them if they want to come on here. They haven't replied, so maybe you could use some of
my influence. I know they are both very busy. It takes them a while to respond to me.
It's fine. We've got unmarked envelopes full of cash. luncheon vouchers or whatever.
Somebody else who creates fantastic work is Bogus Cheesecake, who has recently released Belarus.
You're making a shit up. Bogus Cheesecake.
Yeah. I think that's his Twitter handle as well, at Bogus Cheesecake.
Sounds like an indie band from Detroit.
I don't know.
Bogus Cheesecake. All right, give us the elevator pitch on that one.
Well, he's created a world with flying whales and blimps, and you can fish in the sky.
This is brilliant.
Yeah, that's all I needed. As soon as I saw that, I was like, yep, getting that when it was released. I only knew about it because I made him a video for it, so I was quite pleased about that.
Bogus Cheesecake.
Yeah.
Fishing in a blimp in the sky.
It's kind of feels. I'm going to tell him that I've talked about him. He's going to be like, why are they mocking my name? It's not my fault.
And again, like, that's the beauty of D&D. I know I'm lightly mocking Bogus Cheesecake. And if that's actually the name his parents give him, I'm really sorry, Bogus. Right. But, like, that's the beautiful thing about D&D. Like, we pushed our kind of imagination so far. That doesn't sound insane.
No, and it's not, like, the weirdest one you could find, is it?
No, really? It's not the weirdest shit you can find. Whereas in everyday life, like, if you start telling stories to people, they're like, he's a bit crazy. Or they just start backing away, or you get fired.
Why is he still talking to me? This is the bus. Go away.
Whereas, like, in D&D, depending on what your DM's like, and I'm fairly liberal, you can do pretty much anything. Yeah. And a lot of our players often just do whatever the hell, you know, like, we ended up with an impromptu murder mystery. Sadly, it was before we started recording the podcast, but it was a murder, and these guys waded into the middle of it, and they just became the world's worst crime scene investigator.
where she shed more blood from our own wounds than the victim.
Yeah. And in true, like, aliens fashion, sucked the killer out of an airlock in a blimp. Hence the blimp connection. Yeah.
Yes.
But, so that's interesting. So Dungeon Dudes.
Yes.
Clearly got to check them out.
Absolutely.
Bogus Cheesecake.
Yeah.
Who maybe one day, Matt, we will get Bogus Cheesecake on this very podcast.
I have no doubt they would be absolutely up for that. In terms of outside of TTRPG, I actually got a lot of my inspiration from professional wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a story. They tell a story every single week, and then there's a battle, and then there's a fight between two people, and sometimes other people get involved. And the talkers, the proper talkers, like Paul Heyman, Chris Jericho, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, they give them a mic, and they can make you feel anything. They can make you hate them. They can make you love them. They can get you excited for a match that 10 minutes ago you never heard of. And it is just all a story. It's just one long, most of the time, storyline that just brings all these different people together at times. And I'm still a fan of wrestling. In fact, as we're recording, WrestleMania is tonight. But yeah, big fan of wrestling since I was a child. I loved all of it. And yeah, that's when I'm thinking about how I want to tell a story, that's where my inspiration comes from in terms of D&D.
You're just dropping allegorical bombs there.
That's fascinating.
That's fascinating. I must admit, I'm never really into wrestling. Obviously, growing up, a child of the 80s, it was all Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the cards? You used to get these like Panini cards. Yeah. I never had any, and I think I found one on the floor. And it was some ridiculous, I think it was called the Tugboat. And if you attempted to call yourself that now, it sounds quite masturbatory. Sounds a bit like a sailor having a wank. But, like, I never really got interested. But obviously, I was well aware of it. And I can obviously, allegorically, I can see that.
Yeah.
That's kind of nice.
Like you say, it's like a D&D session. It's a it's a lot of talking and then a fight.
It's exactly that. Like, the jump between D&D and WWE is a lot smaller than you might think.
But do you know what the magic of that is? It's suspending disbelief.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that really comes in handy. We're about to go serious. Strap on in. I know a lot of people who struggle to play D&D because they can't suspend disbelief.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't want to... Ooh, I was nearly going to... Yeah, right. So I may have gone out with someone once, and we might have gone to the cinema, and we might have gone to watch the first remake of the Star Trek series by J.J. Abrams. And it starts... I can't remember if I told the story in the last podcast. Apologies if I did.
I don't think so. I've recently listened to it. And it
we're sitting there, and it starts, and I'm like, this could be good, this could be good. You know, I'm a bit of a Trekkie, have been. And it comes up and the intro comes in and like the ship comes in and she just turns around to me and she goes, why are they in space? And I'm like, fucking called Star Trek. Just suspend disbelief. It doesn't need a ginormous canon, a backstory. Like, let's believe they're in fucking space and everything
just
is built on
that. Right. They are, okay? It's
they're fine. Just in space.
That's the world we're living in now. They are in space.
It's a very low bar to bang your head on in Star Trek.
Compared to the rest of Star Trek, and I've not watched a lot, them being in space is the bare minimum that you have to accept, okay? Yeah. That is it. That is the premise. From there it goes up. It's an uphill battle.
But having said that, and apologies to the person who probably doesn't listen to this, but, you know, anyway. Suspending disbelief is the key to D&D, and it's something that I can do very easily, very fortunate, and I can fall into imagined worlds and all that stuff. But I know for a lot of people, that's quite a high bar to turn off the day-to-day, the bills, the stress, the anxiety, the work-related problems, family, whatever. You know, and we live in very stressful times.
Yeah.
And I do feel very blessed that I can just be like, fuck it, you're staying at the door, and I'm off to make-believe fantasy.
Absolutely.
World.
I'm in my office, I've got my headphones on, nothing else is happening.
Mm.
I got a bit, like, in terms of the low bar there, like, if I had to compare Star Trek in space with D&D, I think you meet at a tavern is probably where we're going in at that. Because I don't remember the last person I met at a pub, let alone chatted to, and then went on an adventure with a week later and just accepted they're my friends now. Like, that's the, you meet at a tavern. Why am I at the tavern? I don't know. You're meeting them there. It's fine.
But this is the problem, and I don't want to bring this back to, like, planet Earth here, but you don't meet people in bars anymore. So dating, you used to meet people in bars, and you strike up a conversation. You're either had to be cripplingly funny or, like, a wizard at pool or something like that.
Yeah.
If you attempt that these days, you get arrested.
Yes.
But I don't think you could start a D&D campaign and be like, you're five disparate people, an elf, a dwarf, a half-orc. You all met on a digital app whilst looking for, like,
Tinder for adventurers.
Yeah. It just doesn't quite work in a modern setting like that, does it?
It just wouldn't work. But yeah, I suppose, like, every fantasy hero generally starts off half-pissed in a bar, which is how our campaign sort of started. I burnt the bar down in our campaign before it started. So they were like a bunch of adventurers who had pissed about and burnt down their local and were then about to serve time or community service. Mm. So I got that worn trope out of the way by burning the bar down before session zero.
I like the, just on that note, it was interesting to, then we went in, we did sort of a prequel one shot a little bit later on where we established that, for example, Belsia had met Hanash before. And then that had led us to the bar, and it was just nice to have that kind of...
See, I missed that episode. I was either ill or away.
Yeah, it was quite a...
And we didn't record the episode in there, so I've got no idea how a bloody player's in the own campaign.
But every interaction I have with Hanash, I'm... You might not even have noticed it, but in my mind, it's like Hanash is my oldest friend in the party. Like, I knew him before anyone else, so it's quite an interesting...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is the thing with Matt, you discover,
I'm
Paul.
I'm in the DM, AJ.
Ah, fuck it. I sometimes feel a little bit like God looking down from the clouds, and I'm like, I gave you this planet, what the fuck have you done with it?
Why are you doing this? Not again.
Not again. Why have you strapped a Tesla to a rocket and flown it to Mars? Like, and The thing I love about Matt, which I think is brilliant, is he plays the game on a whole other level.
Yeah.
and the amount of academia and forethought that Matt brings and never shares until one day he will bless us with his nuggets. But yeah, no, and I think that's, again, we've been talked about a million times, is the beauty, again, that players, some people just come to D&D and are like, I need an escape.
Yeah.
And other people are like, I need a laugh. And some people are like, I need a reason to be sociable. And some people love to get stuck into the long grass, like Matt.
And everyone, I think in our group, we have an example of five very different players who couldn't be more. We all enjoy, like Chris, who plays Tati, really loves the, I think he's not a min-maxer, but he's a rule-focused player. He's like, okay, if I do this and this and this, I get a critical hit. Mm-hmm. Whereas Hanash is just like, what can I take a shit on next?
That is his modus operandi.
But every player, each one of us is as very much a valid player as the next. Like, yeah. And it's the fact that somehow this the whole thing works is just so, when it kicks off, it's beautiful to see. It's
very nice.
Yeah.
I will say, I am on episode 6 of your podcast, and I know there's like 30 of them, and I'm catching up slowly.
Oh, that's lovely. We should actually fess up at that point. I should fess up, because really I'm in control of it. I actually took the first 3 episodes offline. The problem is, when we started out, we were just enthusiastic, and I knew fuck all about podcasts. Yeah. And listening back to them, the audio quality on the first few podcasts is abysmal, because we didn't have like multi-stream recording like we're doing now, where I can, you know, if Matt's cat goes ballistic, we can just edit that particular bit out with no issue. Yeah. We didn't know. So it's all just one long stream, the first few episodes. And I thought, I wonder how many people we lose who just turn up on episode 1 and are like, wow, that's really low quality. Even though it could be funny, the narrative could be good.
Yeah.
But the problem with episodic content is it lends itself to being listened to sequentially, mm-hmm. rather than, say, I'm just going to zone in on a true crime podcast because my partner's obsessed with them. You know, you're like, oh, yeah, they're doing one on Ted Bundy. I really dig Ted Bundy. I'm going to zone in to Ted Bundy. I don't know why I am, because he was sexy. But, like, the most dangerous people always are. That's some words I'm going to regret later. But you can sort of zone in on the different, you know, and if it's interviews, you're like, oh, I really like Louis Theroux, so someone's interviewed him. I'll go and listen to that. Whereas with ours, you've only really got the titles to go on. Why would episode 16 be any fucking funnier than 4 or 23? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was a little bit... And I thought, well, at some point we'll do a campaign 2, even if it's with the same characters, and we'll all have much better mics and much better at not talking over the top of each other. So I'll admit here in public, yeah, I might have nuked the first few episodes.
That's fine.
But being that we started halfway through a campaign anyway, we literally started with Tati halfway up a ladder. It made no more sense then than it would have a few episodes later. So it's good to hear you're digging into it. You'll have to remind, what goes on 4, 5, 4? The first one's
you're
a one
in
shot.
A clock tower, and someone's put their hand in it and lost the nubs of their finger.
That's Tati. Yeah.
I'm watching it at 1.5 speed. Well, listening to it at 1.5 speed. So everything is going very quickly. And I do it while I'm walking my dog or washing the pots or something. But yeah, I listen to most of them. What?
That's what people do. They listen to podcasts sped up.
I don't know if people do, but...
Oh, okay. That could just be a you thing.
Yeah, maybe. It's an option on Spotify to speed
That's
it
brilliant.
Up. You could also do it on the Twitch, because I listen to my own back on 1.5, because then I'm less conscious about my voice, because everyone sounds funny when they're sped up.
That's interesting. All right. I'm going to bring this back down to Earth. What's your favorite piece of homebrew content that you go back to? And I'm going to put a caveat on that, not your own, someone else's. Oh. That you've co-opted and you just think, that's so good, it should have been in the bloody rule book.
Excellent question. There is one that I could say, but it's going to feature later on in Homebrew Havoc. And I'm hoping my players listen to this, so I don't want to say it, but it's quite important.
Maybe you could just rename it a little bit, like...
So, no, I really can't. I don't know how I could do it without giving it away. But the Tavern Studio, who is another Twitter friend of mine, has, as the name might suggest, various taverns. And he's done it so that you can just plot them in a campaign, and they're fully built. They have a menu, they have a drinks menu, they have a price list. They have about 3 or 4 different NPCs that... in each tavern, and he's done it so that there's a wine bar, there's a tea shop, there's another couple of taverns that I can't remember off the top of my head. Just basically because, oh, there's a tavern. Oh, what does it look like? I have no idea. I haven't prepared it that much. But this person has, Tavern Studios has, and it features in Homebrew Havoc. He very kindly lent us these taverns.
So just as a bit of digging into that, is it a generator or is it a set of very well-written taverns?
A set of very well-written taverns. So like he's even got images of the menu so you can show it your players. And I think a couple have like mission boards outside, so it's got a couple of plot hooks and side missions for your players as well. So I've used that in Homebrew Havoc and a couple of other campaigns as well.
Ah. And just to shamelessly name drop him again, what was their name?
Tavern Studios. I will double check their Twitter name.
Tavern Studios. We're just going to have to earmark all of these people on Twitter.
Yeah.
So, you see, I love moments like that. And probably because I'm a show pony and an improvising twat. But any time, like, you know, it's got to have a comedy name. So the inn's got to be called, like, the Krusty Barnacle or, like, something like that. Like, mm-hmm. And it's just another opportunity to piss about, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
We very recently, in an episode that hasn't aired yet, but I don't think it's a major spoiler, there was a, I always get their name wrong. Is it Arakoka? What's the name of the bird people?
I don't know. My mind's gone blank.
I just know him as that owl guy.
Arakoka sounds right. Yeah.
We're going to have a lot of people DMing us when this goes out. Anyway, he's an owl man and a panicked. And I was like, shit, what's his name? So I just called him Civic Loaca. I just thought, like, having a bird multi-use orifice as his surname would be, like, hilariously funny. I often panic and just go for the low-hanging fruit of jokes.
You see, that's really good, because I often panic and just go for the most mundane of names ever. Like George, who is a prominent member of every campaign I've ever been in, or ever DM'd, is just because I panicked to give an NPC a name, I was called George. The other one is Steve. So my names are like single-syllable male names because I just can't think quickly enough. And so George just always goes to my head.
It's always like there was a guy who worked in an abattoir in ours, and I just called him Pete Creamy Shanks. And, like, it's just how many stupid words can we put together to make him sound vaguely offensive? And I remember a long time ago watching an interview with Neil Gaiman, who, again, is one of my fantasy heroes. If I had to have a fantasy hero content creator, it would probably be somewhere between Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman.
Mm-hmm.
And rest in peace, Terry Pratchett, massively informative in my life. And Neil Gaiman did an interview and people were asking him how to make characters and things like that. And he said, always give your character a silly hat. Before they do anything, before they say anything, people might struggle to remember that character in the sea of other characters. So make them stand out slightly, give them a silly hat. Well, their silly hat is always their name. Who's going to forget a guy called Pete Creamy Shanks? Like, before he's done anything, you're like, well, this guy sounds like a tit.
Yeah.
and you start thinking, he must come from a proud heritage of Creamy Shanks.
Is there a Creamy Shanks family crest?
Yeah. Exactly. what would it have on it? Oh, God. Jesus. But, that's really good. Sorry, I always go way off topic. So, having a set of tightly written taverns sounds brilliant. And I'm sure that is something that can be deployed to good use.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm always jealous of content.
The only other thing, and I didn't want to say it because it's kind of mine, but if I give my wife full credit, then it's not, is the Nucklavy, NucklaVee. It's technically not homebrew because it's actually a first edition monster, but I didn't know that when I made it up. So it's from Scottish folklore.
Right.
And if you Google a picture of Nucklavy, you will be horrified.
You can hear the pitter-patter of keys.
It is a horse with a man on top, but it is a singular being, and all you can see is the muscular system.
I must have spelled that wrong, because I've got the Urban Dictionary definition of fuck-knucklery.
Isn't that how you advertise your campaign? Fuck-knucklery?
No, we're fucking nuggetry.
Ah, right. Okay.
As a man who works in copyright, it's all about the fine detail.
I will send you the spelling.
That is hideous.
There you go. I think that's right. Yeah, so it is a singular being with a muscular system as skin. And I introduced that in my Curse of Strahd campaign as the thing that pulls Strahd's carriage.
The fuck is that?
Yeah.
Unpleasant.
Go find that. NucklaVee. It is a horrifying being. And my wife said, would it be really cool if this was in your campaign? I was like, no, that's horrifying. I'm definitely using it.
I have so many questions. It looks like a centaur fist fucked a prosciutto. Like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, it's either from Scottish mythology or Norse mythology, or both, I suppose. Depends which website you read.
They've either been drinking whiskey or eating mushrooms. Yeah. One or the other. That is quite something. That's going to lead me on to my next question, which, look, we are nothing if not professional. Where do your best ideas come from? Do they come to you on the toilet, in the shower?
So my best ideas come to me at either 3 a.m. when I'm too tired to remember to write them down, and I shouldn't really be awake.
Mm.
And I'm hoping, even while I'm having the idea, going, I barely hope I remember that tomorrow. I should write it down. I'm not writing it down. Why aren't I writing it down? We'll remember it tomorrow. Or, interestingly, my best ideas come to me while I'm writing for a prep session, but the idea is not for that session. It's for about 6 sessions from now when I do this amazing like plot twist. So my mind is working on sessions 6 weeks from now while I'm typing for sessions in 2 days.
You're like the Garry Kasparov of D&D. You're literally like, you've walked into my web.
Yeah, exactly that. All my campaigns are weirdly connected, and I'll leave clues here and there. And even if I'm the only one that gets it and gets the connections, I'm still happy. Even if my players are like, that's weird. Why did that happen? Like, because 17 sessions ago, this happened, and this is why.
See, I wish I was that smart.
Yeah.
I'd leave really puerile shit lying around. We had a tabaxi roof, we had a tabaxi treetop village, and in the map I just left shit around, like the leader of the tabaxi was called Thunderblossom, and on his bed I just left several aubergines and a paddle. Just so, like, if anyone zooms in on the map,
that's environmental storytelling.
Yeah, I was literally, maybe it was sparks. I think somebody picked up an aubergine and bludgeoned a character to death with it at one point.
Of course. It sounds like us, yeah.
Sounds like something you'd do. That's interesting. So you're very much like multitasking, like you're thinking ahead, being inspired by by stuff.
Like I can be stuck on the session that I'm on. Like, I don't understand how my players are going to get from here to here. I'm short of railroading them or telling them to go there. But then I'm thinking, like, it's okay though, because in 8 sessions, this twist is going to be amazing. And I'm like, yes, but what's happening right now? I don't know what's happening right now, but in 8 sessions, it's going to be amazing. So it's great because I can think ahead like that. But it would be really nice if I could also think for the right now, because a session is in 2 days and I could really do with some prep.
That's interesting. See, I've just become so jaded and bitter at Matt's inability to stick to the fucking plot that I think I could write this shit, or I could have a loose idea and and a lot of stuff. And then the amount of fucking times NPCs are like, maybe you should go to Port Zoon. And they're like, no.
It's just natural to, we'll go in the opposite
direction.
What do you
do now? Well, there's a giant arrow telling you go that way.
And they never do.
Go that way.
Yeah. It's like doing the main quest in an Elder Scrolls game. It's
They've got so many side quests, they're like just going off the bottom of the screen. It's obscene. It is obscene.
Is it not difficult to resist that urge to kind of throw the twist in straight away? Or does it take patience
It's hard to resist because I just want to tell them what this amazing twist is going to be. Like, guys, this is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wait, no, I can't tell you. It's even worse when my wife is in the campaign, because I rarely can't tell her. And she's the only person I can tell, because I can tell my other friends, but they'll be like, sorry, what's D&D? Why are you rolling dice? Let's go back a bit. Like, no, we don't have time. Okay?
Yeah, no, again, it's whatever fevered crap falls out the front of my head often, but very much from an improv background, I'm like, I'm just going to delight these people by yes-anding every piece of nonsense that falls out the front of their heads. But that's actually quite insightful, just the way different DMs operate, quite frankly, and they're worlds apart, but we all have fun.
Yes.
Right, I'm going to bring this into land.
by saying, what advice would you have for people thinking of creating homebrew content but never have?
So if you've never done it before, I would really think about why you're doing it. If it's just because you want to play a ranger in a certain way, but it's not in the cool rulebook or any of the books that you found that are official, search online. It's very rare that you won't find somebody who has shared that idea and done it for you already. And if that's all you wanted, fine, great. But if you're creating it because you want to do it your own way, make sure you know the rules and the writing style of D&D. Everything's described in the same way for consistency's sake, and so that people reading it know what it is. When I first created it, my writing was all over the place. I was like, yeah, this person rolls a d4 for this. I was like, no, dial it back. Copy what is in the core rulebook for that specific moment. And so I won't lie. I am sure everyone says this. I don't know all the rules. I often say I don't know any of the rules in D&D. Mm. I trust my players to know what their players should do. And then I just roll dice for a little bit. I think one of the reasons I like homebrew stuff so much is because then the rules change and I don't have to pretend I know them.
Mm-hmm.
What I do know is somebody else who has been playing D&D for over 20 years and has memorized the entire three core rulebooks, a player's handbook, Dungeon Master's Guide, and Monster Manual. And so whenever I create something or see something created, I'll send it to him and he'll go, yes, no, change this, and it's fine. And I trust him way more than I trust my own experience.
That's interesting.
Because I've been playing it for 8 years and I'm still surprised when someone tells me there's something new with the Dungeon Master's Guide. I'm like, is there? There's a guide to that? Great.
But then I think it's a lot, again, it's a lot to do with having a group of people who trust each other and you're there to have fun. I mean, for instance, I played for years before I realized I was using the performance check wrong. I was like, shit, that's charisma. And I just, any time anyone had to do anything, I was like, you're sort of performing?
Yeah, that makes sense. That's fine.
But you're still rolling a dice at the end of the day, and it's still a degree.
Numbers are arbitrary. Like, you could roll anything from a 15 to a 17. I'm probably going to say the same thing. Yeah, like, it's fine. Your rolls are rolls.
No, I agree with you on that one. And I think, you know, the rules are there to get you from A to B. Mm-hmm. Unless it's not like you're playing in the Wimbledon final and you suddenly change the fucking rules and someone's like, piss off. It's a mechanism, it's a carriage, it's taking you from one place to another place.
I think as well, as long as you're honest with the players from the very start, from that session zero, and go, this is rules light. If you ask me if you can do something and the book says no, I'm probably going to say yes. As long as it goes back to that thing I mentioned earlier, the counterplay. Is what you're doing impossibly difficult to counter? Or is what you're doing incredibly creative and I hadn't thought of it? And really well done on that. And they'll go, yeah, absolutely, you can do that. A prime example is in one of my home games that I did record for a podcast, but then got so bored of editing it, I stopped doing it as a podcast. Wow. So mad props for those who edit podcasts. really mad props for that. He basically had to eat the in-world spiciest burrito. This was the spiciest burrito they could ever do. And if they did it, they got some clout in the town, so they got some discount.
Yeah.
And it was a cleric. He'd been volunteered by his fellow players to eat this. And he said, like, you're a rules light DM, aren't you? And I went, yes, but you can't really say that in character. Because that won't make sense. Like, can I use chill touch on this burrito to make it less spicy? I was like, well, what's the official wording of chill touch? And he read it to me. I went, you know what? That sounds amazing. And even if chill touch isn't described as that, I love the idea of you chill touching this burrito to make it less spicy. That sounds fantastic. Really well done. And I let him do it. And he didn't roll high enough to completely get away with it. But he rolled high enough that he didn't, you know, defecate himself there and then in the town. He did, however, defecate himself the next day because of how badly he rolled on a performance check. But not there and then. So that was
he shat himself because of charisma.
So,
That's why we're coming to D&D for the lols. And I think very much come down on the rule of cool and fun within reason. So we got a character who can talk with animals. We've got a couple now, I think. And this, I mean, just in one of the most recent episodes, last episode, I think, she was like, can I talk to a spider? And I'm like, well, that's an insect, but why not? Like, at some point, if she starts trying to talk to the dust mites in the mattress, I might have to think of, like, them as a hive mind.
Yeah,
like an NPC made up of millions of collected dust mites. But I think that's where the fun of it comes. And a proper DM, I don't know, like a rules-related DM would be like, no, piss off. Yeah. I think you'll find a spider is an arachnid.
I can't imagine playing D&D with that kind of attitude. It just feels like, well, why even pretend you're a magical crocodile at all if you're not gonna accept you can talk to spiders?
Yeah, it's very weird to hear the word no at a D&D table, isn't it? Because, like, can I try this? Yeah, absolutely. It's so rare that I ever say no to players for anything that sometimes can I roll to, like, seduce a dragon is a rarely prime example. Can I roll to seduce a dragon? I'll go yes, but even if you roll a 20, you won't be seducing the dragon. You'll just not be being incinerated. That's your choice. Like, you can still roll for it. I'm not going to stop you, but you're not sleeping with this dragon. And if you want that, it's going to gain attachment issues and text you every 3 seconds to find out where you are. And the dragon's going to get jealous that you're hanging out with other dragons, and then there's going to be a domestic abuse thing, and it's going to go wild.
And that's how Puff the Magic Dragon was born.
Yeah.
Like, great stories have an origin, and being true to things and just saying yes when you probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
I think is a bit, no, I know exactly what you mean. And there are probably a few times when I'm editing the podcast and I'm like, ooh, contention. I say far more likely to say yes just for the shits and giggles.
Yeah.
And to keep the status quo. But no, that is a very good point. Right, before we run out of time, because I know you've got other things, you're a man in demand. Do you have any shameless plugs or shout-outs you'd like to give? In fact, come on, let's just give over a little bit of time to Homebrew Havoc, because we've been around the houses, but I don't think we've done it enough justice, and I know there'll probably be quite a few people on there who'll be listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not on, people who aren't on there, let's tell people how they can get involved with that, what they can expect. And
absolutely. So as I mentioned at the start, you can find me on at @ampersandd20 on Twitter. I spout about the Discord server, Homebrew Havoc, multiple times a day. And yeah, that's where we chat, create different ideas. I've got loads of channels for, NPCs, character classes, subclasses that, Matt, you put your crocodile thingy on earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we also stream. You can find us on Twitch at @ampersandd20, I think it is. So www.twitch.com/ampersandd20. Where we have a very interactive stream. You can give players bardic inspiration. You can give me bardic inspiration as a DM. And we even have a D20 game that subscribers can play. I'd be honest with you, I've introduced it last week, and I don't know what the prize is, but we can play it. So, yay.
Why not?
But yes, you can also find my website on my Twitter as well, where I have all my TTRPG graphics and intros as well. In terms of shameless plugs, I would like to thank all of my Homebrew Havoc players. That's Ailey, Shiv, Callum, and Tony. You can find them all on Twitter at their appropriate handles. I would love to say their appropriate handles, but I can't pronounce some of them, so I'm not going to, because I don't want to do them disservice. But you, if you find me on Twitter, you'll find them pretty quickly.
We could always put them in the show notes if you want to fire them over to me afterwards.
Wonderful. I also want to thank my Saturday crew. So we are just starting this Saturday a Descent into Avernus / Homebrew campaign, which is very much not like Descent into Avernus, but there's going to be a lot of hell and fire and demons. And nice. So it's quite like Descent into Avernus, but that is Callum, Derek, Mashati, and Joe. Callum is in pretty much all of my games at this point. He, like, I just can't get rid of him. Yeah. I love Callum. He's a great person. He's an absolutely fantastic player. And I do want to give a special shout out to Derek, who is in that campaign. He is DMDM_studios, because without him, I probably wouldn't be in the TTRPG space. He's the first, what I would consider, like, proper friend, not just, like, business partner or fellow player, proper friend that I found in the community. And all of my work and success and anything I do in the future is pretty much down to him and the amazing community that he started over on his Discord channel. So I do want to give a special shout out to him.
That's lovely. That is lovely. And of course, we've still got all the people who we've aforementioned. Sorry if I missed some of you out. We've got the Dungeon Dudes that I definitely need to go and check out. My personal favorite, Bogus Cheesecake. the name alone has me on that one. The people who you nominated to be our next guest, Abyssal Brews. You're going to have to grease a few palms to get them on here. Their picture blocked me for harassing them on social media. Tavern Studio. For those people who need to quickly slide a pub into their campaign. And the sponsor of this week's episode, Knucklery.
Knucklery.
I apologize. Fuck me. Yeah, if you don't want to sleep tonight, go and Google that one.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I feel like we have put the world to rights and name-checked some fairly wonderful people in the world of TTRPG there. That just leaves us enough time to give a massive Adventurers Anonymous thank you to Paul, a.k.a. Ampersand.
Woo!
Thank you for turning up, and thank you for sharing a little bit of your world with us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been an absolute delight. I look forward to it.
And we'll try and get involved in something you're doing on Homebrew Havoc very soon. So take care of yourself, and we will see you soon.
Woo, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. See you in a bit.
Hello, Pod, it's AJ again. Thanks so much for joining us again this week. We really appreciate you tuning in for another dollop of fun-packed fantasy fuck nuggetry. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this interview as much as we did making it. And for any TTRPG content creators out there who didn't catch it in the interview, why not pop over to Homebrew Havoc and join in all the collaborative fun there and check out some of Paul's hard work. Paul himself can be found on the Twitters at @D20. So why not go and give him a follow and find out more about his sinister cabal of content? As for the veritable smorgasbord of content creators Paul references in this interview, we will try to link to you all in the show notes. And, assuming you've made it this far, why not consider hitting that subscribe button and never missing another episode again? Better yet, give us a 5-star review on whatever podcasting platform you are on and help spread the word of our shenanigans far and wide. As ever, for all the latest news and updates, we can be found on the socials, on Twitter at AdventurersANO1. We can also be found on Facebook and Instagram, and at adventurers-anonymous.com. And like we said before, if you truly are unlucky, you too may also one day find yourself being interviewed on this very podcast. So, that just leaves time for me to say a huge goodbye from Matt and myself. We'll see you next week. And remember, happy adventuring, my friends. Stay tipsy.